Morning. Welcome to Chatting Between Takes. I'm your host, Sean Benson. Morning. I am in my car. It is 6:40. I'm on my way to St. Thomas, Ontario for karate grading. I got my gear in the back, although I won't do any real karate today. And my student, one of my longtime students, he's getting his brown belt today. I'm so stoked for him. I tell you, man, I might be as excited as when I got my brown belt. Which is not true. Because I was way more excited when I got my brown belt. Because I was getting my brown belt. Plus, I was younger. I might be more satisfied now, though. So, again, interesting. So, when I was, let's see, when I got my brown belt, I don't know, maybe I was 20? I don't know, I can't remember. Something like that. Maybe 21. Probably 21. I was pretty excited, you know. It was all about, holy crap, I'm going to get my black belt. Which is that pathway, you know. It's the way we do our grading system. There's three levels of brown belt. We don't have as many colors as some systems, but that last three belts leading up to the black belt, there's sort of a, I call it the like tink, 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 which is kind of what my student's going through right now, Alden, which is that top of the roller coaster. And then the next number of months are going to be the flying down the vortex until it's like, whoa. Assuming he sticks it out, I have no indication he won't. But when I was 21, I've been working on this in my life. It was about something else. It wasn't not awesome in itself, but it was about, oh my God, I'm going to get my black belt. And today, the satisfaction is that I'm still on my way 22 years later. And I trained hard this week and I fought this week. I posted a photo of Instagram, which is just a mouthpiece, and then below it is a mouthpiece made of Kleenex. And it was just simply that I got to the studio, my studio where I fight at night, and didn't have my mouthpiece. So I was like, well, I don't want to not fight, so I just fashioned one. And again, so I was proud of that Wednesday, and I'm proud of this Saturday. And granted, when you're a fourth degree black belt, the next belt takes a little longer to come than when you're a third degree brown belt getting your second degree brown belt down the road. That won't be real long. So there is more of a built-in reason for anticipation. But even then, this corner I've been turning, it's one that's sort of in all facets of my life. And what it really comes down to is that more moments are becoming complete moments. So I'll give an example. You know, I've been working on the Saving Hope. Still have another shoot day, maybe two, but I think it's just one. So I've been working on this thing for months. So the financial comfort and the arc of, oh yeah, I'm working on Saving Hope. So there's a nice aspect to that. So let's not pretend there isn't. However, when I was younger, the sort of quote-unquote, I'm working on Saving Hope, would have sustained me, or at least I would have thought it would have sustained me, for all the in-between moments. So this is interesting, because this to me gets to the lack of health that ultimately led to needing to avoid my life by glossing over my life. So I was working on a TV show, and that was my identity. This is really what I'm getting at. And I talked on the last podcast about sense of self and you know, spending too much time on oneself. Or maybe I didn't talk about this. I want to talk about it today. The idea that was enough for me at the time, even though it wasn't. But if I could just say, I'm so-and-so on TV show so-and-so or film so-and-so, I was good. Now, I wasn't good. Oh. By the way, I'm looking at the thermometer. Do people still say thermometer, or do they just say I'm looking at the temperature? Again, it's an iPhone thing, right? Your iPhone isn't a thermometer. I don't know. I grew up looking at thermometers when I wanted to know the temperature. Now I just look at a screen. So the thermometer on my car says 12 degrees Celsius. For you Americans, that's, 54. So it's chilly. Autumn is coming. Autumn is coming. Yesterday was the first day where I got on my motorbike. It was raining a bit. I had just a t-shirt on. Emily was on the back and we were like, holy shit, it's coming. So, starting to sneeze a little or get little tickles in my throat. The idea of being on a show, I believe, sustained me, and it's how I gave myself an identity. It's not enough anymore. And by the way, it's not enough because I'm enlightened. It's not enough because I'm bored of living that way. Leonard Cohen started taking Prozac, I think, in the 80s for like 5 years. And he also was into being a Zen monk. He wasn't fully on the monk route at that point. He was just dabbling with it. And if you don't know, Leonard Cohen spent 5 years, I believe, as a Zen monk in a monastery. And take that, Daniel Day-Lewis, in your 2 years of cobbling. And he basically was taking this Prozac, and one of the side effects is a diminished sex drive. So he had this diminished sex drive, and he was pretty famously quoted as going, I thought I was achieving enlightenment because I was becoming less driven by sex all the time and my impulses to just constantly be with women. And then I realized, no, it's just a side effect of Prozac. So I wonder if boredom of myself is just a side effect of being boring, but I'm considering it enlightenment and turning a corner into something more interesting. Which is interesting because it's coming from boredom. I'm bored of my own thoughts. I'm bored of thinking. Remember, thinking's a verb, right, people? Like, man, I'm thinking, yeah, that's like I'm shoveling or I'm dancing. I'm thinking. Now, the reason I say that is because that's now a conscious choice. We talk a lot about this. If you're thinking something, it's fucking on you. It's not on the thing you're thinking about. If that's like a stalker mentality. If I'm thinking of you, it's because of you. And therefore, we should be together. Your biggest fan, Stan. You know, and that's, or, by the way, in fucking, usually guys, in relationships. You know, the idea that because I'm thinking it, and because you made me think it. No, you're thinking it. You're painting the wall. You're making dinner. Now, granted, there is slipping, falling. These are things that are verbs, but, you know, you're not doing it on purpose. Although, I'd contend that in all but the rarest of cases, you know, you've placed yourself in a position to slip or fall. I fucking hoofed a door frame yesterday. So lately I've been fucking losing shit all over the place. I lost a car key. I screwed my studio partner out of a bunch of rental gear by forgetting to give him his key, and then that cost me money because he had to rent it. And then yesterday I'm walking and I hoof a door frame. And right as I was about to go into self-pity mode, I realized I had my laptop in one hand, my lunch that I just made in the other hand, and I had my phone tucked in my ear because I was sort of about to check my voice messages. That's no one's fault. And that's not the world. God damn it, I'm just trying to get to the bathroom. And why did I kick the door frame? I'm doing too many things at once. I'm trying to get her done. And I'm trying to get her too much done. And that's a fear-based thing. Trying to get too much done is a fear-based thing. I'm not talking about the single mom who's quite literally making ends meet because, you know, she's taking the nighttime degree and has to work the daytime minimum wage shit job, can barely eke out a living. That woman's doing too much because she has to. Most of us, if we're living in the first world, are doing too much because we're afraid. We're afraid of what'll happen, and this is what I'm about to, this is the whole point of what I'm saying. We're afraid of what'll happen when the noise stops. Or we're afraid when we leave the message. You know how many times my parents will email me and go, did you get my phone call? And then they'll phone me and go, did you get my email? I'm half making fun of my parents, but that's me. You know, this idea of trying to basically follow the ball after I throw it and guide it. We're not real good at letting go of stuff these days. The fact that you can see when someone's read your text message, fucking danger. Especially for the aforementioned stalkers. Because now, there's the countdown till the person reads the text, and then there's the countdown from when they read it to when they respond, and that's all supposed to mean something. What the fuck ever happened to, like, my buddy Andrew, he's got the best one, you know? If you text like, hey man, nice seeing you the other day, he won't text back unless he feels like it. And then when people are like, oh, he never texted back, he's like, oh, I'm sorry, was there a question there? And I'm with that. Like, whatever happened to the person who says that was a nice day, that might be enough for that interaction, for that moment. But these days, people, it's motive, right? I'm texting, hey, that was a nice day, to try and get a response. So now my motive isn't just to express gratitude over a nice day. My motive is to, like, poke the person, basically. You know, when Facebook first came out, the poking was big. Poking was a very honest thing. Poking is, hey, I got nothing to fucking say. I just want you to notice me. So we kind of, like, poking became kind of loserish. Doesn't really happen anymore. So now what we do is we pretend we have something to say, but it's just a poke. And, yeah, the gaps. So those gaps, I never let them exist when I was younger. I just let the arc of I'm on a show be enough. By the way, I did this with women too. I'm with hot person A. So that was enough. That the relationship might not have been fulfilling was a bit irrelevant. The life looked good, and I wasn't doing this on purpose. I was doing it because it seemed like enough. You know, my intentions were kind of good, and I was attracted to these women, and I do like my job. What's different now is, again, that boredom. Like, if I'm shooting Thursday, my Wednesday's just still Wednesday. And that's not through any amazing... I will say this, though. I've been working... since I was 18, consciously on living moment to moment. It started with a book called Zen Flesh, Zen Bones that I got introduced to through karate. And fundamental to, you know, deepen that karate stuff is these ideas, these Zen ideas. It's married. You know, a lot of the idea was that the samurai warriors used to be able to cut guys' heads off. They used to go to battle on horseback. And, you know, there was a very... inherent Zen, because it could have been your last day. You might, you know, end up having to go to battle, or it might be your last day, so you just live fully. When the samurai were banned from carrying their swords and wearing their top knots, I'm gonna say 1867, Meiji Restoration, now, how do they still have that when they don't have that? And I imagine veterans maybe go through the same thing. And so that's when the sort of, you know, specific Zen aspects started to become named a bit. You just are Zen when you might die today. Sorry, you don't need to call it Zen. But if you're on that, you know, about to parachute into battle in World War II behind the enemy lines, that's a Zen moment whether you call it Zen or not. But it's later where we start to go, well, I'm not in battle, so how do I find that peace, and how do I make this moment important? Because you better fucking believe that moment was important before those, you know, that bottom fell out of the plane and they jumped out to, you know, go kill some Jerry's. So how do I make today like that? Well, I'll tell you this, I don't know specifically, other than that making the conscious choice years ago and never letting up is starting to pay dividends. And I talk about this. Don't not do something because it's going to take 20 years. The time will pass anyways. What if you could be brilliant at 60 And right now you're 40 at something you've never even started. Fucking start it, man. Excuse me. Dave Steele, burp. Start it. Do it. The time's gonna pass. You know, and I'm sure for me that's actually going to become more familial. Emily and I aren't in a rush to have kids, but we're gonna. So that's something that's a lot of you listening probably did from 20 to 40, and then I'll do from 40 to 60. You know, the wheel turns in different ways for all of us. But that little corner, I don't want to keep going over and over and over this idea, but that little corner that got turned, I believe it's from a 22-year-ago seed of, I want to live in the moment. And what happens then is both good and bad, because the bad is that I'm still just me on a Wednesday, regardless of how many parties or films or interviews I'm doing on a Thursday. And that means I'm responsible for myself at all times. You know, I don't let my mantles and my trophies on the mantle. See what I did there? Ayo! Homonyms. He rained while it rained. Let me help you out on that one. The king rained while it rained. Apparently it was an Ontarian king, because right now it's, well, it's not pouring, but it's raining. So I'm not my trophies. I'm not my titles. I'm just Sean on a Wednesday. And Sean on a Wednesday still has a lot of fucking, you know, anger and fear and a lot of good stuff, too. A lot of great stuff. So this brings me to my next idea. The other night I woke up, I couldn't sleep. I was really antsy. I don't know exactly what about. You know, once I remember crying every day for 6 weeks. And I'm talking like major tears. Hours of tears. And I've talked about this in the podcast. And I was just bawling. And I was in a meeting of friends and acquaintances. And I mentioned this while bawling. And one of the best things I've ever heard in my life. Someone came up to me and said, you know, it's really beautiful what you're going through. It's a very vulnerable and lovely thing. If you can, try not to figure out why or need to figure out why. You're just sad. There's no big because. You've lived a long life and you know, it just is. It was a really beautiful thing, she said. A girl named Ryan. And really helped me, because, again, I talked about this in the podcast. When someone dumps you, why? Why? Why didn't I get the part? No, just, you didn't. Sorry. And I feel like that was my first moment of that. It's, you know, it's just, you're crying today. You have sorrow in you. And so the other night I wake up and I'm just totally antsy. Now, it is TIFF. It's a very, like after midnight, every night the city's a buzz with a lot of booze, a lot of drugs. Now, I've been in fucking hundreds of environments with booze and drugs since I stopped doing them. That doesn't mean I'm immune to that tug. Doesn't mean I'm immune to that, but I don't know exactly what it is. If I did, well, I don't know. No one would ever have any trouble, like, let's say, kicking booze or drugs, which is one of the hardest things to do, because you just go, oh, it's because of this. Let me write down the pathway, and you just don't follow that path. But this shit's sneaky. Our thoughts are sneaky. Our feelings are sneaky, and including the ones for sorrow or, again, I talked earlier about thinking being that verb. So, like falling or slipping, you know, I believe we put ourselves in a place to think shitty thoughts. But again, we're choosing to think those shitty thoughts. I do think that these feelings, someone would argue, someone more maybe down the fucking path than me would go, oh, you're choosing those feelings too. You needed to feel that. By the way, I'm not always a fan of that idea. So let's say I'm even thinking crappy looped negative things or just looping on boring thoughts. This idea that you need to, and again, someone would say, well, of course you need to because you are. Therefore, you must need to. Yeah, some stuff's habitual. You know, some stuff really is habitual. I like the construct of you need to, therefore you are, because what it does is it helps remove the layer of hating ourselves for doing the thing we don't want to be doing. So what it says is, well, you needed to be doing that. I.e., when you date the person you tried to break up with three times, been there, and my buddy Kobe says to me, you need to keep doing it. You'll do it till you don't. What he's saying is don't be too hard on yourself. Yeah, you're with the wrong girl, but you're not ready yet. It's an interesting one because in the past I've always sort of like, thought I was a tough guy who could be ready for anything. And it's like, wait, you're telling me that I know I'm with someone I don't want to be with, but I don't quite know how to end it, and then I'm pussing out on that? And Kobe'd be like, well, you're just doing it till you won't. I don't know if you're pussing out or not. And he's kind of right. He's creating a construct in which I'm not too hard on myself. And by the way, it's a double not too hard on myself because the idea that I'm so tough that I can do anything, that's being hard on myself too. I need to chill the fuck out on that shit. Just be who I am instead of define who I am. Again, I fucking hate that shit. I'm the kind of guy who... No, you're not, probably. And even if you are, let your actions... Let us tell you you're that kind of guy. Stop telling us you're that kind of guy, Shawner, or anybody doing it. It's called being a blowhard. I sure catch myself being a blowhard a lot. And I catch others a lot. Luckily, I'm probably more of a blowhard than them. So I just shrug and go, they're not as bad as me. Blowhard. You're a fucking blowhard. Fucking blowhard. So, anyways, this idea of, you know, the self-definition, but also in those 3 a.m. moments. So I wake up the other night, and Em's out at some parties, and that's all good. Me and her are fucking great about that shit. We go to most of them together, and then she's got more juice and more desire. So she'll be like, hey, going out late. So, by the way, the night before, I woke up at 4 a.m. while she was next to me. So, you know, I've got a control for that. So I just kneeled down and meditated at 3 a.m. And for me, it was like, man, I'm really, like, feeling shitty and I'm really... But I meditated. And I was talking to a friend about this. Man, I really wanted to, like, fucking go party. But I stayed in or... Man, when Em got in, I really wanted to make it about her, but instead I was like, how was your night? And we had a beautiful chat, one of the nicest we've had in ages. And, because I opened up to her. And so I was chatting with a friend about this, and she goes, you know, it's interesting, because everything you're telling me is that you think you're a certain kind of person, you know, a druggie who blames his girlfriend for stuff, but... You are, in fact, meditating, praying to God, and giving vulnerable, open love to your favorite person. And I was like, right. And so what this friend said to me is, usually when we use a but, the but negates everything that comes before the but. The simple example is, hey, I was going to pay you rent, but, ... The but negates the I was going to pay you rent. I was going to pay you rent, but I just got fired from my job. And, well, now you're not going to pay me rent, you know. Oh, I wanted to be on time, but, okay, well, wanted was irrelevant. You've negated before the but. Now... I'm using that for sort of negative examples, but where my friend and I sort of came to it in a positive way is, man, I really wanted to fucking take it out on her, but I just took her in my arms and we shared intimacy. Well, remove everything. Remove the butt and everything before it. Emily came in and we shared intimacy. And what's interesting is it goes to what I was saying before. It is about the action, not who I think I am. Action. Girl walks in door. Guy treats girl well. Guy, girl, talk to the wee hours, connecting, like vocally connecting. And you could watch it. It's not that one of us thinks we are while the other's like, this guy's a jerk. So, just remove everything before the butt. What happened? What happened? Not what is my whole perception of it all based on my fucking egoic need to be a certain kind of person. And in this case, sort of subjugating myself. Woke up in the middle of the night, meditated. That's like even kind of cool. To me, that's as gangster as anything. That's that Zen shit I'm talking about from 22 years ago. What I didn't do was text someone and be like, it's getting late. Who am I, my parents? Who am I, a controlling fuck? No. I'm a human with unease. I knelt down. That was the action. So again, what's the action? Am I texting like a teenage girl to try and control someone? Sorry, teenage girls. Just see you on your phones a lot. Or am I just manning up and doing my shit? That night it went well. It did go well. Look out for those butts, people. I sure am, and I don't mean I like big butts and I cannot lie. You are the anaconda butt, baby, got. You know, like, can we get rid of fake racism? By that I mean Taylor Swift got called a racist for her Shake It Off video because when she sort of haplessly fell into the hip-hop section, it was not even all mostly black girls twerking, and people actually wasted time and energy writing that this was racist. Have you seen the Anaconda video? I know we've talked about this. I just can't get over how people waste their time. There's real racism. Don't fucking put up. You give like sort of left-wingers a bad name. Left-wing's awesome when it's about caring for humans over polluting environments, and when it's about, yeah, let's have a livable wage. You know, it was just Labor Day. And again, this isn't taught in history schools because it doesn't benefit anybody, right? Like, I know not everything that's taught is of a benefit, but look, I'll use America, but Canada is a more subtle, much more subtle, by the way. We're not as jingoistic, but, you know, there's a patriotism there that says, yeah, well, we're going to teach that we came and we conquered, or we entered World War II and we basically helped end it, and that's all true. It's also got a history of, like, gunning down, like, actual police officers at the hands of the factory owner, you know, the Mr. Burns is going fire now, gunning down workers who just didn't want to work all day, every day, and wanted a living wage, not to live in tents and have their 4-year-old children start in the same mine. People had to die for your weekend. And then what you want to do is call, like, people who want a living wage lazy. It's kind of fucked. But anyways, that's the point, is that there's great left-wing stuff. When you start calling Taylor Swift racist, now you're just fucking... And hey, there's a couple podcasts in a row I've been on about T-Swift. If you think I have a crush on T-Swift, yes, I do. Yes, I do. But can a love be crush? I love her. I'm pretty sure she loves me too. If only she would take the fucking time to answer my emails. Your biggest fan, Sean. Wait, dog, that was you. I love this fucking... listen to Stan again. First off, it holds up. It's so brilliant. For those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, it's one of Eminem's best songs with a little Dido in the back.
please don't go to wondering why. Got out of bed at all. Woo!
That's the voice, babe. It's the golden throat driving on down the highway, passing Cambridge. It's so funny because Eminem had at that point, I think, sung 36,000 songs about raping and abusing his wife and beating her with steak knives and cutting out her larynx and fucking her throat. I'm pretty sure those are the exact lyrics. And was sort of like known to be a dick at times to his fans, where he'd get all surly and angry and be like, fuck you. But if you listen to him in Stan, he's like, yo, dog, sorry, I just didn't see you after the concert, dog. Oh, yeah, I'm shipping you a starter cap. Oh, your cousin's just like me. Yo, hey, man, you want to chill out, though? I just say that stuff for fun, yo, dog. And it's like, oh, yeah, no, I'm just the coolest, most... We would have lunch, maybe, but yo, dog, I'm a little concerned about your behavior. You ought to look into that. You should see a therapist. Yeah, okay, Eminem, pre-relapse and your awareness of your own addictions. Like, come on. You can't have it both ways. Although you can, because the song's great, and he gets to paint himself as the most, like, chilled out. Oh, yeah, no, I was kidding. It's kind of like that person who, like, provokes their partner into a fight. Again, might know whereof I speak. Where you get in a fight, and then as the fight's escalating and the person's starting to freak out because you've pushed their buttons, yes, you have, you kind of go, whoa, ho, ho. All I was doing was bringing up, look, all I said was, it's like, yeah, maybe on paper, but, you know, that's not what happened. You provoked, you prodded, you woke the lion in that person, and then you backed up. And even if you're not afraid of their lion, it's another way to win, right? Careful how you win your arguments, because again, that's what Eminem's kind of doing there. He just does it great in a song that I might even pull up on my music after this. And by the way, in no way sponsored by Eminem or T-Swift, believe it or not. Just a fan, Stan. Oh man, the rain is a-stopping. Okay, I'm gonna pull over, get a little gas. We'll talk to you guys in a sec. Okay, we're back. There's only a couple things I want to talk about, and partly too, because, you know, sometimes these car casts work, my voice is a little hard. And when I listened to the last one, that I didn't have the same mic I usually use, it's a little bit trebly, whatever. We're going to get that mic back. Steve McQueen, people, was not retro. Okay? Neither was James Dean. Why am I saying this? Because a pair of Steve McQueen Pearsalls will cost you $525. The Pearsalls I own were $180. They're indistinguishable unless you point out to someone that you're wearing the Steve McQueen ones. Same company, same shape, just not the quote-unquote retro Steve McQueens. But even more than that, because that's not the best example, people will buy, you know, like the style that he wore, or as is evidenced in the Porsche market, cars like he drove to be like him. So, you know, in 1971, he had like the 1970-71 911S. So people really want that car and they identify it with Steve McQueen. But you're wrong. What Steve McQueen had was not a quote-unquote 1971 or 1979 911S, or with the turbo that just sold for $2 million. What Steve McQueen had was the newest, fastest, best car that Porsche sold. Ah? Same with James Dean. People want to drive the old 550 Spider, you know, and it's like, oh, I want to be like, that's like James Dean. No. James Dean would be driving the 918 hybrid right now and paint little bastard on that, because A, he could afford it, and B, it was the fastest, best car available at the time. And what's when you put it in that light, it's interesting because in a way, a lot of douchey guys become a bit less douchey. You know, Steve McQueen had the Rolex Submariner 4-liner, I believe, that was just of his time. So he went out and he bought a Rolex. A very ubiquitous Rolex that would be like someone going to Raffi Jewelers up at Yorkdale right now and picking out a nice, you know, Submariner with a few, maybe an extra tweak, or I'd like the GMT. Again, ubiquitous watch. It's considered now, well, it's a gorgeous watch. Nobody slags off a Submariner, but it's a little bit like, ooh, the starter kit. Well, you're not really into watches yet, so you just get the Submariner because it's the Rolex and it's identifiable. It's a fucking brilliant watch. It's one of the best visual designs ever. But also, they keep doing subtle updates. Steve McQueen would be buying the new Rolex. And again, if you're a watch person, like, he is getting the new one with the ceramic bezel. And because he'd be interested in that. He was, as was James Dean. James Dean was not driving a Ford Model T from 35 years earlier because Clark Gable had driven it, or Tom Mix. And same with Steve McQueen. And I'm just putting that out there as actually a way to find freedom. Whatever you're into, I mean, yes, just they wore cool like khakis and white, like basics, but that's basics for any man. That, again, was very much just the style of the time. They just had the nicest versions of those clothes, so they were cut well. So I'm just putting out there that these guys weren't retro. They were actually cutting edge. You know, I mean, he was too old at the time, but maybe Steve McQueen would have been into disco and looked like Grace Jones had he been 30 years younger, because that's what was cool in this late 70s. Again, by that point, I think he passed and he was, or was on his way and he was 55 or whatever, but you know what I'm getting at. They were at the cutting edge of the style of their time. And they weren't sitting around going, how can I be like the guy who came 30 years ago? You know, my karate teacher posted this really awesome thing about, you know, confidence versus lack of confidence and what that behavior, how it manifests. You know, what kind of people we are. Like, if you're a loud talker, if you can sit quietly. It's a pretty, I've seen this around a bit, this graph. It's like orange on the one side and gray on the other. And what he put, which I loved, was, you know, some days I'm one, some days I'm the other. Most days I'm a mix of both. Exactly. Confidence is an interesting thing because when I was younger, I was supremely confident. But I also unknowingly suffered from a real lack of sense of self. But I didn't know it. And that's such a weird thing. Such a weird thing. If you'd pass a lie detector, are you lying? If it's later revealed that you created a mental block? You know? I mean, that's probably called sociopathy or psychopathy. I don't know. But I thought about that a lot when I read it because at a lot of the times when I've been most confident in my life, those are the times where I've been most self-unaware. And then a lot of the times where I've just kind of like, you know, maybe been a little bit afraid. I remember the first, when I started playing with my band, I wasn't drinking or doing drugs with Analog Smith. And so I go on stage, and all the kind of years prior to that, I'd been in a band where I'd get drunk every night. Well, I never got nervous. I just was excited to play and then had a beer. Well, excitement was nervousness, and before I let it turn to nervousness, I'd have the beer. With Analog Smith, I couldn't do that. Chose not to do that, so I'd be like, oh, fuck. I'd start to get totally nervous. My hands would tingle. And then I'd go out and I'd play the best bass or guitar of my life. Way better than I'd rehearsed. Whereas when I was drinking with that other band, I'd rehearse all week, not nervously, in my apartment. And then I'd go out on stage, supremely confident, with a few beers in me, and play worse than I'd rehearsed, because I was sloppy now. I don't know. I don't have any definitive thing to say, but I know in my life, for the most part, there's been a bit of an inverse relationship between how confident I feel and maybe how good I actually feel as a person. And it's not all bluster. I mean, I've never, ever been shy about standing in front of large groups of people. You want to put me in front of a million people right now at Washington Monument? And I have something to say, or I've been asked to say something, I'll do it. I'd relish the opportunity. So that's just something where I'm confident about that. But that's an innate thing. That's like a spider knowing how to build a web out of its egg. You know, it hatches and it knows how to do something. That was just kind of something I could always do. So that for me is like eating breakfast. That's neither confident nor not confident. And I take no credit for it, by the way. I didn't do that. I was just always able to do that, like the web. And I'm talking about stuff that's sort of like I have to face. And, you know, for me, again, it was dealing with people was always the hardest thing. I had such a weird concept of relationships growing up with the folks. You know, relationships were combative. And men and women didn't look at each other in the eye much and just talk. You know, there was always edge to it and ploy to it. That was my model, so I didn't know how to just talk to those girls. I've said this before in the podcast. If I liked a girl, she was in the gym with me, I'd just have to go start showing off or being weird, and they'd be like, why doesn't he like me? It's because I like you, I don't know how to talk to you. It's the obvious, pulling pigtails or snow jobs. Snow jobs! God, I wish I knew what snow jobs were. No, what am I trying to say here? I'm trying to combine sexual awakening with a snow job. Think of how hot that could be. All right, Emily, you're getting some fucking snow jobs this summer. Hey-o! This winter. Hey-o! Autumn is coming. Hey-o! There was one other thing I wanted to talk about. Hold on, give me one sec. Ah, yes. This is what I wanted to talk about. I was at a triathlon that my buddy Andrew ran, swam, and biked in. I think there was probably 1,200 people in this race. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. But there was a lot, and there was a lot of spectators. So at least 1,200 people all told. And around 4 p.m., I went to the toilet, and there wasn't a drop of piss on any of the toilet seats. Now, triathletes tend to be a very focused and intelligent group. You know, you have to sort of really get into your nutrition over the long term. You're monitoring your watts on the bike. When someone flies by you on a hill and it's at, you know, kilometer 89, you can't go with them. It's a very different kind of race. You have to just look down and make sure you're still putting down the watts that you know you can put down sustainably for your bike ride before you run a marathon after. So that little ego boost of catching the guy on the hill could be the end of your race. Even if he's in your age group and your main competitor. He runs his race, you run yours, or she and her, and then you, at the end, it's your training and all that. And I don't know, I'm not talking just intelligent. A lot of intelligent people do stupid shit, but generally speaking, it's a certain sort of caliber class of type of individual. When I say class, I don't mean socioeconomic. Maybe I do. I don't know, maybe, yeah, sure. No piss on the seat. My gym, if I go to that gym at 6 a.m., by 6:02, every fucking seat is covered in piss. Like, what the fuck? And it's not just my gym, it's like, that Ironman's the exception. Because I was like, holy shit, how are all these toilets? And like, I have to go to the bathroom a lot because I got this small bladder. And the way this one was set up, there weren't a lot of urinals. So, I got to see a lot of the toilet seats, no piss. My gym, I'm always wiping toilet seats. Guys, I don't know how you girls are with this. It's your toilet. Like, it's your toilet. If you have to fucking take a shit. An hour later, maybe your pre-workout kicks in. And, you know, nobody's coming clean. You're sitting on piss now. What's going on? Why are you pissing on your own toilet? Like, this is what I don't get. And this is where, you know, this is again where I can see right-wingers have a bit of a point when they get angry. Assuming it's the right kind. I'm not talking about the, like, Kim Davis fucking cunt type people, you know, who are so fucked in how they think their thinking's right and logic means nothing, you know. They're fucking idiots. If you look at her lawyer, he was asked directly, what if your conscience says people shouldn't get divorce certificates? Is that fine? He wouldn't even answer it because he couldn't answer it, because it would be like Nomad going, but if you... everything you say is the truth, brr, brr, brr. Because reason upon which we're hoping, look, again, feeling is for how you fucking feel when you're dancing or how you feel when you're falling in love. It's not for when you're doing your job that's a government post, that's how our countries are supposed to run. And I'm sorry, but I am going here. Go to fucking Sharia law if you want your religion to dictate how things are run. Because as much as I'm a spiritual guy and I'm up at 3 a.m. kneeling to my God, I'll tell you this. That doesn't mean I can show up late to work while we're supposed to shoot and go, well, God says I was supposed to come late. And then have them go, okay, well, you're gonna be fired then, and me go, you're a bastard, and you're trying to damn my religion. That's obviously fucking retarded of me to do. No, that's wrong. I shouldn't say that. I don't want to use that word anymore. That's ridiculous of me. Oh, I will use the word cunt. Male or female, you're a cunt if you pull that shit. I'm not talking about that kind of right winger. That's not really right wing. I'm talking about the person who's like, I busted my fucking ass. Let me use a guy. I don't want to put thoughts in his head, but I met a guy named Danny out in Calgary. Danny Benson. I don't know how Danny votes. I don't know how Danny thinks. But Danny posts some stuff on Facebook that leads me to believe he tends to the right. And he posted this thing about, you know, the squirrel who works very diligently collecting nuts for the winter, and the grasshopper who basically hops around the whole time, and then the grasshopper come winter's like, well, where's my nut, squirrel? And it's you know, it's a good bit of writing. It's just kind of wrong. Sorry, Danny, I don't agree with that thing, although I agree with the writing. What I do agree with is this. Okay, I'm making up that he's going to vote conservative. Totally making it up, by the way. I really don't know. But he should. Because he busted his ass, I think, in telecom in the 90s, like selling cell phones. I'm forgetting the exact conversations we had. And he ultimately built himself into a very successful man. That's the kind of person who should be saying, I don't want someone who's lazing around. I don't want to be paying for their health care. It's what I always get at. That would actually be someone voting in his own self-interest. That makes sense. Danny's awesome. Danny's not a cunt. Danny's what we should all be. What we should all be, again, is not driving the car Steve McQueen drove, but he drove the car right for him. So, near as I can gather, Danny's expressions align with himself. He's led a certain kind of life, and it's offered him a certain kind of thing, and he therefore doesn't want a certain kind of other thing. Good. That's a proper political system in which we evaluate our own self-interest. That's not the Kim Davis cunt. Now, again, where I say that this is sort of where a conservative who's, let's say, paying for public space, and you go in and it's fucking pissed all over. And this does a little bit get socioeconomic, because you got to be fairly wealthy to do triathlons. The amount of time you have to dedicate to training, the amount of equipment you need to buy, blah, blah, blah. So there is a socioeconomic aspect. But regardless of how much money you have, you don't need to piss on a toilet seat. But anyways, when public space tends a bit more toward fucking somebody like ripping off a toilet seat or pissing on it, if you're paying for that, you might be like, yeah, fuck that. I want to pay for my own bathroom and I don't want to pay for the public one ever. And if I have to pay a little more to have a Spoke Club membership or a Soho Club membership downtown, so when I need to piss downtown, I go there. Granted, there's not a lot of public bathrooms downtown, but you know what I'm getting at. The idea holds. I get why some conservatives, real conservatives, I'm not talking cunt conservatives, an actual reasonable conservative might go, I'm not paying for that fucking piss toilet. I take care of my shit. And people who don't take care of their shit, I don't want to pay for it. And by the way, I buy that. Where I lose the plot with the conservatives, is the environment. They don't take care of that shit. They piss on that shit. So, you know, if someone came along who was an actual fiscal conservative running for government, they'd still have to not piss on the toilet seat of the real toilet seat. The one the natives, you know, when people want to do their memes on Facebook. The one the native Canadian or American or Iroquois or whatever the term is, that quote. Where they were just here and then all of a sudden people came and pissed on it for money. That's the one where it's like, yes. Yeah, so it not only becomes interesting because, A, I understand why a real conservative... Start calling people cunt conservatives, by the way. When they start conflating their own bullshit ideas with a certain party, go, you're a cunt conservative. When they actually are like, no, I pay for X and I blah, blah, blah. You know, listen and go, well, I hear that. Whatever. Maybe whatever. I'm for humanity over budget. Yoris, my buddy Yoris posted this. Can we stop? Like, who frames everything about the budget? The average person is not that affected by the budget and doesn't even fucking know what it means. Okay, these are all, they're not all, sorry. Like, there are countries, you go to Greece, and all there were when I was there is unfinished buildings on side of mountains. You know, the country got bankrupt. Spain, I think, went through a similar thing. There's like full ghost towns in Spain. Top Gear always goes and uses them for their tests. So, there is real economic collapse. Don't get me wrong. But where there isn't real economic collapse, it's just a tool to sort of manipulate. And even this recession, look, Harper's put us into two recessions. Country's doing pretty fucking well. Country did well before him. My whole life, Canada's done well. Okay, it doesn't matter who's in power. And the supposed NDP disaster in Ontario in the 90s, Canada, Ontario did well too. You know, an individual's, your mileage may vary. Okay, Toyotas are great cars. Somebody bought a Toyota Lemon. It doesn't mean that Toyotas are lemons. But so you see what I'm getting at is like, since when has this thing that no one understands become the construct by which we all decide to vote? What about what these people are for? What their character is? And again, what actions they've taken? What actions they've taken? What have they done? Not how are they spinning numbers that you don't understand and don't affect you anyways. Just putting that out there. But I really do raise a glass to the Danny Bensons of the world who are unified. And again, I don't know him well. I really like him, though, and we might actually do some business together. I think I'm pretty unified, too. Like, I vote in a way that benefits me. I perceive the benefit, by the way, and this is what's interesting, when the person has health care, who I don't know, I do perceive that as a benefit to me. And again, it's just how we think. I think if my whole country's educated and healthy, there's less chance that I'm gonna have to be in a country where more people piss on seats. I think that'll be a country where less people piss on seats. The educated, healthy country. Because the educated, healthy triathletes are the ones who aren't pissing on their seat. Oh! Holy shit, did I tie that up in a loop. Goddamn. I'm almost at the bottom of my large Timmy's. If anybody was going to sponsor this podcast, it should be Tim Hortons. Tim's? Timmy. Tim. Tim Horton. You hear me? Let's talk. See what I did there? Coffee chat. Whoa. Whoever can tell me what that's from gets a free signed by me, Tim Hortons, chatting between takes paper cup. Shouldn't it be roll up the rim to win soon, or is that a winner thing? I can't remember. Oh, okay, I'm going to let you guys go. This has been fun. I hope you're digging it. This chatting between takes, and that's a wrap.